Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. FedEx Express has secured a government contract to bring yet another international shipment of infant formula to the U.S. That's supposed to happen on Wednesday. The first international shipment of baby formula will soon be hitting the U.S. store shelves after the first batch from Operation Fly Formula landed in Indiana yesterday aboard an Air Force C-17 cargo plane, that coming from Germany. The 39 tons of Nestle infant formula is about the equivalent of more than 1.5 million 8-ounce bottles. Now, according to the White House, that's enough formula to fill about 15% of the need for formula nationwide. But the ongoing formula shortage is being blamed for the hospitalization of four babies in South Carolina today. According to the Shawn Jenkins Children's Hospital, the babies had bad reactions to new formulas. The switch to new formulas the babies couldn't tolerate was forced by the parents not able to find their usual formula. How did we get here? And what can parents do about the baby formula shortage while they wait for production to return to full steam? Well, we have two perspectives on this very serious issue tonight. My guests are Dr. Marilyn Corder, pediatrician and adjunct professor at Howard University School of Medicine. Also, Peter Pitts, former Food and Drug Administration Associate Commissioner. If you have a comment, if you have a question, if you have a concern that you want to talk about tonight regarding the baby formula shortage, give me a call. Lines are open right now at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mr. Pitts and Dr. Corder, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
My pleasure.
So before I even get into this discussion, we spoke to Samira Fazeliz. She is deputy director of the White House National Economic Council about this issue. And this is what she had to say when we asked her, how did we get here?
It turns out that infant formula manufacturing in this country, it's a highly consolidated industry. You have four companies that control 90% of the market. And what happened is back in February, one of those companies, the company that has the largest share of the market, some 40% of the market, issued a voluntary recall of one of its products. And they shut down one of their major factories up in Sturgis, Michigan, for health and safety reasons. And the good news there is last week, the FDA and the company, Avid Nutrition, entered into an agreement detailing the next steps that they were going to take to safely reopen that plant. So in the next 6 to 8 weeks, the company believes they'll be back online producing more formula again.
That was Samira Fazeliz, Deputy Director of the White House National Economic Council. So, Dr. Corder, let me first ask you, from your perspective as a pediatrician, Just how serious is this? I mean, beyond the obvious.
Yes, thank you, Harold. Thank you for having me. This is very serious. You know, what we did not say was that this particular company, Abbott, has the contracts, lots of the contracts for women and infants and children, which is called WIC. So they will be the ones that most of our socially, economically, challenged mothers would have to go to get the milk. So they get it's like a coupon, and they go to the store. But the shelves have been empty. And unfortunately, this is a threefold problem. We have the supply chain shortage. We have the employee shortage, as well as Abbott shutting down because of those deaths previously back in February. So what has happened right now, Harold? We have mothers diluting their formulas, trying to spread it out. We have infants that are beginning to show signs of malnutrition, failure to thrive, hyponatremia. That's a term we use in medicine, meaning that when you dilute, when you add more water than what the instructions say on the formula, let's say with the powder formula, you're adding more water to spread it. But what you're doing is causing the sodium to decrease rapidly in that baby, which can cause brain damage and seizures. So that's why it is so serious. You know, we try to give out. We still had a few cans we're giving out. We're advising and even telling them, you know, we know that the main two or three companies is what you hear about, but there's another brand or two, and we're talking to them each and every day because we don't want to lose another baby.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Pitts, 39 tons coming into Indiana yesterday. Do you know what kind of formula is coming in from Germany, and what impact do you believe that and this next shipment coming in on Wednesday will make?
Well, actually, it's coming in from Switzerland through Germany.
Okay.
And the shipment that landed in Indianapolis yesterday was for exactly the babies that we were talking about, the high-risk babies that really can't be switched. So I think the right move is helping those most at risk earliest. Bringing in baby formula from overseas will help, no question about it. But it's really a finger in the dike type of situation. I mean, what happened, well, first of all, from the White House comment, they didn't recall one product, they recalled three products, and they shut the entire plant down. And this plant produces 48% of all the baby formula sold in the U.S. FDA went in there in March. They did inspections. There were quality problems. There were safety problems. There were bacteria problems. It would have been regulatory malpractice not to shut this facility down, which the FDA did. And that's as they should have done. The FDA then reached out to the other manufacturers to try to get them to ramp up their manufacturing, which they did. But you can't just flip the switch from 10 to 11 and all of a sudden you're producing a lot more. But that has picked up about 30% of the slack, and that's part of the solution as well. But ultimately, what the FDA didn't do was contact pediatricians to let them know something might be going on and to be prepared. They didn't contact retail outlets to put hoarding and panic buying situations in place. And they didn't talk to parents to let them know what might be coming down the pipe so they could be prepared. And I think that if we've learned nothing else from the COVID-19 experience, is that when the government is truthful and transparent and regularly tells people what's going on, people may not like what they hear, but they trust the source. And my fear here is that the public's trust in government now is further eroded, and that's never a good thing.
Dr. Korter, I need you to give me a little baby formula 101.
Yes.
And you've been treating children for decades. That is your wheelhouse. But explain, how did we become so dependent on baby formula?
There you go.
Because I'm just kind of, you know, I have a daughter. You met my daughter.
Yes, yeah. I have.
Yeah, she'll be 24 next month. She's doing fine.
Oh my!
But I remember when she was a baby. Now she was breastfed.
Yes.
Until, her mom couldn't produce anymore, and then we switched to formula. What did mothers do before there was formula?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was interesting. I was on a call with one of my colleagues, and we talked about carnation milk and cable syrup and those things. And, of course, we know now that they were not as nutritional as the formulas are. So, you know, it's interesting, Harold. The advertisement of all the formulas, from Abbott to Mead Johnson, has been more like breast milk, closest to breast milk, helps the brain like breast milk. But you know what? 80% of my mothers breastfeed. And I say that with pride because, unfortunately, the advertisements has not been doing enough to say breastfeed. I'm not trying to put the formula business out of business or companies out of business. But the best milk is the breast milk. That milk is tailored for that baby. That's what the breasts are for. We need to make sure we emphasize that. Now, so today, over the past 3-4 weeks, and then some, I've been congratulating, and the breastfed mothers are coming in, thank you, thank you. And they're donating. Now, here's what has happened. Several of my mother groups, they're donating their breast milk. They're like, look, people are calling, and, you know, they're crying. They're like, I'm down to my last bottle of formula. What do I do? They have this mom chat, and they're donating those that may have formula that had extra formula that they did not use because the child is now over a year old, which is the time that you can give whole milk, et cetera. But my fear, and first of all, yes, I do have some patients who are formula fed. But I think that this is an opportunity, lessons learned, that we can now begin to say, moms, mothers-to-be, mothers expecting, those that are still breastfeeding, considering not breastfeeding, keep it up. Keep it up. Let's breastfeed a little longer and help your sister who ran out of milk. So, again, I see this as an opportunity. Unfortunately, we still have mothers who only have a week's supply left, and we're trying to help them as much as we can. But I am a pro breastfeeding pediatrician. I breastfed my children who are a little older than yours in their 30s when it wasn't even in vogue. It wasn't like the thing to do. But now it's the thing to do. And as much as we can, we need to do.
Let me jump in there. I think there are two important points. I couldn't agree more. Firstly, we have to be careful not to shame formulas for women that can't breastfeed. So I'm
right.
going to make that
point. Yeah, I was about to
right
say that,
front.
But go ahead.
But also the other point, too, going back to the WIC comment from earlier, is a lot of women, a disproportionate percentage of women who are using formula are WIC moms. And there are a whole host of reasons for that. So in terms of education, obviously, you know, we need to target this educational campaign to the women that really need this type of knowledge.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the baby formula shortage, how we got there, and what parents can do while we wait for our production to get back up to full steam. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Korda, you were about to say something,
absolutely,
and then I'm going to go to the phones.
Absolutely. So when they leave the hospital, Harold, and the nurses will show them how to, you know, we call the lactation specialist, we encourage them to do the breast. Some of them are supplementing with formula, so there's value there as well. And as Mr. Peter said, it's certainly that some others just can't. And I respect that and I understand that. We also need to make sure that education is there as well as the next pregnancy and then some. I want to let you know, as a geneticist, after pediatrics, I did genetics. We have medical conditions that exist, and some as high as 1 in 2,000 babies that need the specialized formula. They need that protein. They can't digest. So if they don't get the specialized formula, they will have a severe outcome, if not death.
Yep.
And I will say this every time. Now, parents listening, what we do at birth, because I'm chief of the nursery, at birth we do a PKU, a heel stick. We call it a PKU. We call it a metabolic test, et cetera. I used to read all of them in 11 hospitals when I did genetics at Howard. And we would go through and do something called electromicroscopy, and that particular process would tell us if they have phenylketonuria, if they have a homocystinuria, if they have what we call a significant or a severe metabolic condition. Now, some people call it, oh, it's a brain condition. Well, what happens if you don't pick it up soon enough? The toxins of that inability to digest will affect the brain. These are the new formula. The formula's coming. That's the specialized formula, because you got children, not just infants, all the way to 12, 13, 14. You hear stories after stories. And in order to stay healthy and to live, they need that specialized formula.
You said 12, 13, or 14 months?
Years.
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 Okay, I need you to explain that. But first, I need to go to the phones. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Justin, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening, everybody. Thank you for hosting me. Real quick, so I am a single parent dad who co-parents. And one of the things that I advocate for fathers in my position is to educate themselves. So listening to this, I just want to say thank you. A lot of my questions were already answered. But I will say I have a 8-month-old son right now. We're riding together, and I'm just thinking, like, he's on solid. Would you recommend that I try my best to stretch out the solids a little bit more? And maybe the water, or do I continue to do the best I can with the formula that we do have to make up for that nutrition? I mean, this is education, not just for, you know, this is a parenting, I think, question, if anything.
What you said solids, what do you mean solids?
Food.
Oh, you're on solid food.
Yes.
Okay, because you went from solid food to stretch out formula. So let me make sure I'm clear before I have Dr. Corder answer the question for those of us who have been well out of the baby having period. Congratulations, by the way.
I appreciate that.
So you said solid food, but you're also feeding your son baby formula.
Right. So he still takes his formula, but we've started the process of introducing him to puree, apples, bananas, avocados. So he's eating food now. But now that with the shortage of formula, it kind of makes me question, you know, if he doesn't get enough formula, is that okay? Like, I don't know in terms of where he's at in his growth state.
Absolutely.
Okay, Dr. Corder, go right
yes,
ahead, please.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you, Justin, for that question, because that was what we were just talking about today as well. So those babies who are 6 months and above, we now have them introduce food. Now, years ago, we were giving babies at 3 months old food. We realized that was too soon. So it's exclusive breast milk or exclusive formula until 6 months. Now that he is on formula, solid food or, you know, like you say, food, that's now the formula is a beverage versus the total meal. So your question is very important because it's like, okay, instead of 24 ounces or 30 ounces of milk or formula that he was taking before he started introducing with the solids, now it should be down to 12. And as you begin to stretch out, you can then, as of course your pediatrician will advise, but you can do a little water, you can do a little, you know, juice, depending upon that volume of fluid. Now, years ago, and I know somebody asked me just today, years ago we had them on whole milk at 6 months and then at 9 months. We're seeing some babies some of the parents starting oat milk and goat milk at 9 months or so. But the American Academy of Pediatrics, which I'm a part of, we still recommend breast milk and or formula up until a year old. So I'm going to say more solid, and that's a great question, little more of either water, just plain water for fluid and stretching it out, but not diluting the formula, Justin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Justin, thank you so much for your question. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the baby formula shortage, how we got there, and what can be done about this. I need to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about the Defense Production Act. The last time we heard that was when we were ramping up production of COVID vaccines. That's going to be a question for Peter Pitts. Antoinette, calling for Waldorf. We're going to talk to you next. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm is coming up on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are answering questions all the way up until 8 o'clock. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the baby formula shortage. My guests are Dr. Marilyn Corder, pediatrician and adjunct professor at Howard University School of Medicine, and Peter Pitts, former Food and Drug Administration Associate Commissioner. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Of course, if you're having difficulty getting through, keep trying. I promise I will get to your calls. You can also find me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Before the short break, Mr. Pitts, we were talking about the Defense Production Act, President Biden invoking that last week. Can you give me a Defense Production Act 101, how it works and how it would work in this particular case?
Sure. I'll give you the 101, and I promise there'll be no test afterwards.
Thank you so much.
The Defense Production Act, in this case, is to ensure that the manufacturers of baby formula in the U.S. have priority for the ingredients they need to make baby formula. Now, unfortunately, it's a little bit of political theater here because the major ingredients of baby formula are corn syrup, rice starch, and proteins derived from cow's milk. So these are three commodities, and there are no shortages. There have never been shortages. Not a single serving of baby formula has been delayed because of shortages in these key ingredients. So I think the president is trying to put things in place that he can. He's playing catch up. A lot of these things, including bringing in formula from overseas, could have been done in February and March. So everybody's trying to catch up and look like they're on top of the situation. And I think, unfortunately, politics is playing an inappropriate role here. So the Defense Production Act is in place. It's not really going to make that much of a difference, if any difference at all. But it's the president showing that he's paying attention. And that sends a very important message.
Here's the other question that I had, you know, Dr. Korter, and as I said, this kind of goes to the heart of this, and I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of allergies and all of that, although I do know that this is a critical part of that. And you touched on this a little bit earlier, and I'm going back to what I remember as a child when I saw other, you know, adults with babies when I was a kid, where they were feeding them whole milk. And I don't remember baby formula when I was a kid being served to, you know, back in the 70s. I could be wrong. I don't know. I don't remember. I just remember whole milk. Don't remember the age of the children. We didn't do oat milk. We didn't do almond milk back then. That's a new thing. Help me with that. Because you said 80% of your patients are breastfeeding, but then you have 20%. I know sometimes babies don't latch on. Sometimes the milk production of the mother is little or none. The short of it is, it doesn't work.
Right.
And so back in the day, way back in the day, what, you know, sure, and I'm not talking about the Cairo syrup and the canned milk, but didn't they give babies cow's milk? Help me with this.
Well, you know, the cow's milk we don't do and didn't do, even when I did my residency, and I'm going to date myself in a minute, in the 70s. You know, the formula's been out since in the 60s, and I remember Dr. Rabah and Dr. Fomafai there at Howard University Nursery. We talked about the formula, and there only was one or two, you know, types of formula, the regular milk base and the soy. And, you know, you mentioned the difference, and some people are allergic to the milk base. We didn't have the specialized formula. It was you get what you get. And we did have formula back in the 60s. Now, I will say this. You're right. Many women, many mothers were giving the baby cow milk, just regular cow milk. They may have added a few things, or the carnation milk. And we found over the years that those babies' bellies or guts were a little bit too challenged. They were that was too much. And that's why with now the new, over the past 20 years, I'd say, the recommendation is to do definitely nothing but a formula, a certified formula. It can be generic. There's Kirkland. There's a couple brands I want to get out there. Costco makes one, but it's formula because it's easier on the gut, and not introducing the foods, because, Harold, we used to have folks would chew the food, and give it to the baby at 2 months, 3 months, and they would say, oh, well, the baby liked it. Well, you know what? That doesn't mean it was good for the baby.
Yeah, the baby liked it, but the stomach didn't.
That's right, and down the road, we had lots of inflammatory bowel, IBS, you know, different illnesses of the gut because those food types were introduced too soon. So, yeah, formula's been around a minute, and in this WIC, and I appreciate and I agree with the other guest, Peter, that, we need those women who they need a formula for those, all of the women who can't or need to supplement or need to go back to work or can't breastfeed or on medications and then some, or adopted. You know, I've had some adopted parents who have, you know, with the milk bank, et cetera. Some of the things, if you follow through, there are folks who have formula. Just go online or go and find out, do you have formula? Because many of those parents have some. I'm going to say this on the air. I'm Dr. Korter. You can call my office. I have some cans. I have the Mead Johnson. We have some. My office number is 202-291-0000. 202-291-0147. I'm going to say it again, 202-291-0147, because it's shameful. 4 or 5 months ago, we had milk that expired. And if we had known, you know, that this was coming up in terms of what was happening. So it's lessons learned. But we have good formula. We know our supplies last. Say you heard it on HUR because and Sirius, because that's where you need to hear all your information. You know, knowledge is power, and we're empowering you here. So absolutely, absolutely. So we try to, you know, the oat milk, the goat milk, the almond milk is a new fad, and it's not milk. It's not from cows because, you know, we hear about the antibiotics and the other things that you don't want your baby to have. But bottom line, the formula that's formulated best for the baby or the breast milk is the safest that we can offer.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Antoinette calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
My question is, one of the panelists was advocating to use other parents' breast milk. Is that healthy to use someone else's breast milk?
And is it safe?
Good question. Now, there's something called, we go through the protocols and make
because
sure.
Because of medical conditions, you know?
Right.
So
right.
Go ahead,
now,
Dr. Corder.
We have a link that they will go through and making sure that there's no hepatitis. There's no illness, there's no problem.
Okay.
But they've been doing this for years. Can you hear me? They've been doing that for years. So that has been some of the relief that we're seeing here in the DMV.
Okay. Please go right ahead, Mr. Pitts.
One thing to make clear there is that the breast milk that you'll get from a breast milk bank has been tested for ingredients that you don't want in there. So, but just having another mom give you some of her milk, you know, that has not been, you know, vetted, you know, through any type of medical tests.
Oh, so you're suggesting that, for example, if your neighbor is also breastfeeding and is producing, there's no vetting process. If she says, look, here, I'm producing. I know your baby's not latching on, not producing, or you're not producing. So I guess you do that kind of breast milk sharing at your own risk.
That's right. And that has happened because of desperation. But there is a breast bank that we use, and we tell folks that many of the breastfeeding mothers are donating to the breast milk bank as they go through the vetting. So absolutely, you're right. So there's, you know, we have to make sure there's no hepatitis, et cetera. But as many folks that are now saying, I have extra milk, I have a freezer full, let me donate, because this is a, you know, when you help one, you help all.
Yeah. Antoinette, thank you so much.
202-319-7810,
202-319-7810. Karen calling from Fort Washington. Thanks for calling, Karen. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Corder. You were my daughter's doctor decades ago, and now Dr. Fred is my grandson's doctor. My grandson was born 2 months premature, and he was on NeoSure, and now he's on Similac Sensitive. He's 10 months old. He's about 24 pounds now. How do I stretch the few bottles of the liquid Similac? I saw in the Walmart, Carnation has the powder milk, and on the side, it shows instructions how to make it for babies. So can I kind of sort of mix that powder with it?
So since you are already in my practice, be it Fred, the other Dr. Corder, as you mentioned, and hello, Karen, how are you?
I haven't proposed this question to him yet.
Yes. So, you know, and it's interesting. He's already 10 months. So that means his gut, and this is good information for you to know, Harold, as well. The gut is mature by the time 6 months. So many a time we can begin to blend. Now, this is what I didn't say, but I need to say. Often with the whole milk and the formula, in order to stretch it, they've been 50-50, 50%, like 2 ounces of the whole milk, 2 ounces of the formula by the time they're 10 months. But I always will say, still check with your pediatrician to make sure. But often that's what we're now doing, Karen, to stretch it a little bit, but also to make sure that it's not introducing something that the NeoSure, after they're 20 pounds, then you don't really need the NeoSure from that prematurity gut anymore as a chair of a nursery for 10 years. So, but I'm proud to hear that he is 24 pounds. So we can begin to wean down half and half.
Hmm. Okay, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Karen, thank you so much. Mr. Pitts, what does the FDA need to do now as Abbott, for example, tries to get its act together, for lack of a better term, to make sure that some of the risks and concerns that caused it to shut down production don't happen again? I mean, what, do you have these, FDA inspectors, walking through with their pads and pencils, doing the white glove test, metaphorically speaking?
Well, that's a great question. And, believe me, this is a highly scientific process done by, trained, incredibly dedicated FDA employees. So bravo to them. They get paid poorly and they work harder than you could possibly imagine. But I think what has to happen is, not every plant is going to be shut down because of safety issues that are just unforgivable. And there are going to be congressional hearings on this on Thursday. And I think heads need to roll at the Abbott plant. There could be weather events. There could be an earthquake. God forbid there could be a terrorist attack. What the FDA has to do is understand what industries it regulates across its regulatory portfolio, foods and medical products as well, and understand which products are manufactured in a similar type of consolidated manner and put plans in place. But that's going to require Congress to give the FDA on a regular basis more money for more and more robust and more surprise inspections, because when you keep manufacturers on their toes, they tend to do a better job.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, a lot of laypersons were surprised to hear that while Abbott was the biggest manufacturer, and I know that Nestle and some of the others were, there were really only four companies. Mm-hmm. And that, again, from a layperson's perspective, that's really frightening to me because of something that is so critical to the health of the millions of babies that are born every year.
Right. Well, the thing about baby formula is it is a low-margin, high-volume business, which means you've got to produce a whole lot of baby formula to break even. And that's why it's consolidated, because it simply isn't profitable for small manufacturers. Now, there are small niche manufacturers that can make a nice living, but these are generally far more expensive products for a far more affluent audience. So you can certainly talk about the economic factors that lead to consolidated supply chains, but right now what we've got to make sure is that the factories that are in process of making baby formula right now stay open and produce safe baby formula.
Mm-hmm. From your perspective, okay, now that we know what we know, how do we prevent this from happening again? Is this an FDA double duty inspection issue, or do we need to take a closer look at the entire industry as it relates to the production of baby formula?
I don't think, certainly FDA has a huge role to play to make sure these factories are producing high quality baby formula. But equally, we talked about, again, WIC earlier, the way WIC contracts are awarded, does not give flexibility to the supply chain. I think the government's got to do a serious relook at how it's awarding contracts for WIC state by state. It's got to be much more competitive, and you have to allow more players to be in the game.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about WIC, because it's my understanding, again, that those who receive, those families that receive those benefits are fine for the purchase of the powdered formula, but not the liquid formula. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, and not only that, but also if you live in, say, Maryland, you're limited to a certain brand.
Right.
States, So, and again, that really limits flexibility. So that when one company, Abbott, for example, is suffering shortages, but there's Mead Johnson product on the shelf, WIC moms have a hard time purchasing them with the help from the government. So that's got to, I think, have a serious look at as well.
Why is that?
And if I can...
Yeah, go right ahead, Dr. Corder.
Okay, and it's interesting, and you're right, Peter. It's been interesting as chief of the nursery, as well as being a physician for 45 years. It's almost like, one company may have the dominant of the contract. But when I write for WIC, I may say, I don't want that company. I don't want that product. I want Mead Johnson. Let's say if it's not Mead Johnson's time at the base. And, you know, I have to fight for it. And it needs to be more flexible. I totally agree, because look where we are. It needs to be more flexible, and that particular baby needs to be able, that who is WIC eligible, that parent needs to be able to have two or three selections in terms of companies, because, you know, unfortunately, right, we have this happen, and we're learning lessons learned.
Why is that,
depending on which state you live in, if there's a shortage of Abbott products, that's going to disproportionately impact people who are buying baby formula with WIC.
So, and so again, I'm asking, why is it? Forgive me for asking the common sense question.
So it goes back to the economics of manufacturing. You know, you want to reward companies for making baby formula at affordable prices, and so that's the good part of it. The bad part of it is you can lock too much of the industry out of certain parts of the baby formula market. And I think that's where we've gone now, where, you know, the good intentions of the legislation haven't really gotten the job done, and there have been a lot of unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm.
I want to add to that, Harold, if I may.
Sure.
As being chair of pediatrics at United Medical Center, and my husband being chair of pediatrics at Prince George's, a lot of it's politics. And I remember as a resident, in terms of who would get the contract for the hospital nursery, not the WIC. But there are also contractual arrangements and agreements with the hospital. What formula are we using for the first 6 months of the year versus the next 6 months of the year? And it's interesting.
Yeah.
The thing about hospital purchasing is that oftentimes the physicians and nurses don't have a say in that purchasing. It's basically what's the best financial deal for the hospital.
Exactly. And you drove the point home exactly. Thank you.
Yeah, because again, as I said, forgive the common sense question. If my family is a recipient of WIC benefits and I go to whatever store it happens to be, Target, Costco, Walmart, who knows, who cares, Wegmans, doesn't matter. And this baby formula that they have, they're out of what I usually get. Well, then I think, well, let me just go ahead and get this one. Well, you can't get it. And if I'm receiving these government benefits and my pockets are light, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Correct.
No, that's right. But on the one hand, in normal times when there aren't shortages, the supply issue isn't there, but the choice issue is. And we shouldn't dictate formula choices based on government contracting as opposed to what the pediatrician feels is best for that child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Corder,
yes,
what do you suggest for families that are on their last can of formula and they're concerned about feeding their child?
Right. So some of them have had to go to 2 and 3 and 4, up to 10 different stores. And what I have said is, before you go, call. Before you can, you know, call your pediatrician. Often we will have that formula or something so very familiar. And I'm asking for, you know, some of my patients didn't need the formula. The formula is still good. There's no expiration till next year. And they're bringing it to the doctor, you know, to the office. So as much as you can communicate, and reach out and say, you know, I need this, I need that. So you can't be silenced in this. This is a time to be vocal, as well as to find out, you know, what's closest to your brand. There are generic ones. And as I stated earlier, I have no stake in Kirkland brand, but there are some that's so very familiar and similar to that particular one. So call your doctor, update, and see what they have. And we're going to pray that this truly is short-lived because it's affecting our babies.
Mm-hmm. Doctor,
you know, another source of formula are local hospitals often have a supply. But I think what's also important about what they should do is what they shouldn't do. And we've talked about watering down formula. That's a definite no-no. Don't try to make your own. It's a very complicated chemical process. And really be careful about going online. Because people are price gouging. You don't know whether it's real, whether it's expired, whether it's counterfeit.
Mm-hmm.
You do not want to play Russian roulette with your baby's health going online.
That's why I say call your doctor, because we know what's good and not good. Exactly. I totally agree. So making sure you call your doctor. And, you know, like I said, if you go to Costco or Target, they may have some backup ones as well. Thank you.
Dr. Corder, I got a text from a listener, and she's asking, what can the public as a whole do to support moms with donations for the non-Abbott brand? So if you may have grown children, you're not a woman who is breastfeeding, but you want to help.
Right.
What do you suggest?
Well, you know, it's political. I mean, you have to call the hospitals in general, the ones that, you know, we have five hospitals where babies are delivered, mm-hmm. okay, and to say, look, you need to go Mead Johnson, or you need to go to the other brand. You need to have a flexibility, because these babies need it. And when they do have WIC, what we as pediatricians do, I often will write WIC and say, not the brand that you all have. This is the brand my baby needs for all the above reasons. This is the continuity. This is what this baby's gut needs.
No, but let me, hope you didn't misunderstand what I'm saying. Okay, so John Q. Public, Harold Fisher.
Okay.
I want to help. Okay,
okay.
I'm not breastfeeding. I don't have any babies.
Okay.
I know I don't have any babies, but I want, you know, but I want to help. What would you say to Harold Fishers out there?
A lot of church groups and community groups are bringing in people that don't have babies to help moms, to drive them around, to help them find formula, to kind of be their legs, their arms and legs looking for formula. Lots of ways to volunteer. And also, there are a lot of very good Facebook moms groups that need outside help.
Mm. An excellent idea.
And hospitals, because often the hospitals will get, if it's coming anywhere, it's going to be the hospitals. And some of them are not yet expired, but maybe a month or two that these babies, these mothers need, because it's a sad thing, Harold, to have formula expire.
Yeah.
That you throw out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not cheap. I mean, even, you know, when my daughter was on baby formula and, you know, we were not receiving, you know, government, you know, benefits, but I do remember going to the grocery store and going, "Woo!"
Mm-hmm.
And this was 20, you know, 23 years ago or so. That it was expensive then, and so, you know, for those who, you know, who are not of means but may not be getting. You know, WIC, yeah, you know, and with everything else being as expensive as it is, who needs that?
Another important point is here for parents that are running around looking for baby formula. If you do find it, don't hoard it. You know, leave things on the shelves for other people.
Right.
Speaking of which, when are we going to see this, Mr. Pitts? When are we going to see this Indiana delivery on store shelves? How does that work, if you know?
So here's the bad news. The bad news is that there's no magic solution here. With product coming in from overseas, with the Abbott plant coming online, with the other manufacturers producing at a higher volume, we're still not going to get back to normal, I would say, between, you know, 6 to 8, possibly 10 weeks. But the shortages will continue to become more sporadic and more spaced out. And that's simply because the supply chain will get filled up. So parents are going to have to deal with spot shortages for 1 month, possibly two, and we'll get through this together.
So from a logistical point of view, will families in Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, will they see it first before Maryland and Texas and Washington State and California?
Well, that's one of the big unknowns about Operation Fly Formula, because, you know, this first batch coming in from Nestle's from Switzerland through Germany to Indianapolis chose Indianapolis because that's how it can intersect with the supply chain for Nestle's. For baby formula that isn't for specialized use, you know, the government hasn't shared with us what its logistical plans are, and I think that's a mistake too. I think we really need to know who's in charge, what the plans are, who's going to pay for it, you know, where will it go, so that we understand
what's happening. And the more we understand, I think the more we can work within that process.
Mm-hmm. I did want to ask, and I wanted to make sure that I did get this in, Dr. Corder, because you mentioned the various and sundry kinds of formulas, not brands, but kinds of.
Yes.
What kinds of, how many kinds of formula are there?
Wow. I know in my office alone, we have over 15 kinds. We
15?
Have everything from Gentle Ease to soy to advanced to pro advanced to the toddler to the NeoShore. You know, you hear about the premature babies, as Karen had called in. You know, there's some things that with the premature babies, they have to be a lot nicer on the gut, those formulas, and they are higher in calories. So general formula is 20 calories per ounce, but those premature babies need more. So those are all formulated to be 22 calories per ounce because they need that extra nutrition. We have the formulas that are, of course, the hydrolyzed, the protein, hydrolyzed formula, the special formula that I mentioned earlier, that we have children who can't tolerate the milk base or the soy base or the Gentle Ease. So they have to have the Nutramigen or the Alimentum. There's several of them. And those, you talk about expensive, those are the ones you see behind the locked, behind the locked and double locked glass doors, because they're like $30 a can, $40 a can, but you have to get them. And fortunately, many of them will have a coupon or so. And so we have these parents are just crying out because they're down to their last week of their specialized formula.
Peter Pitts, last thought from you on where we are with this crisis.
Well, I think the good news that the good news for the parents whose kids need specialized formula is that's what's coming in first and getting delivered first. So again, it's being done on a proper risk-based perspective. So, again, don't panic and keep your eye on the prize.
Yeah. Dr. Corder, final word from you?
I'm going to say it's going to soon be over, but reach out, call your doctor, call your neighbor, call your church group, call your hospital. We got you.
Yeah. Dr. Marilyn Corder and Peter Pitts, I want to thank you both for talking to us. I really, really appreciate the information, and let's hope that we don't see any more sick babies like the ones we're seeing down in South Carolina as a result of this crisis. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Amen. Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, May 23rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.